This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History, premieres May 9th, streaming on Hulu.
Hey, Bullseye listeners. Bullseye is produced by MaximumFun.org. You probably heard it in the credits. We are supported by membership, and this is the Max Fun Drive, the time that we come to you to ask you to join us. So we'll have this interview with Sir in just a minute. It is a really good one. But right now, I hope that you will go to MaximumFun.org/join and become a part of Maximum Fun. MaximumFun.org/join.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Most professional musicians decide they're really going to go for it before they're even old enough to drive a car. My guest this week, Sir, didn't figure it out until he was well into his 20s. Now, that's unusual for just about any successful performer. For Sir, it was particularly so because of his family. His brothers are musicians. His parents are musicians. And when I say that, I don't mean like put out a record in college and play with my buddies on the weekends type musicians. His dad played with Prince. His mom sang backup for Michael Jackson and Anita Baker. Like, basically, this is a family where it's weird not to be a professional musician. So, anyway, Sir, he got fired from his job managing a gym. And he was working on pushing songs to artists like Stevie Wonder and Genuine, Tyrese, Jill Scott, but he didn't have any huge hits. And eventually, he realized that there was only one person he trusted to lay down the songs that he was writing. And that was him. Sir cut his first record just before he turned 30. It was called Seven Sundays, came out in 2015. Then he signed with Top Dog Entertainment, TDE, the label that launched the careers of Kendrick Lamar, SZA, and Schoolboy Q. Now Sir has a new record, his fourth. It's called Heavy. It's personal. It's about depression, addiction, and loss. I'm thrilled to get to talk to him about it. Let's hear a bit from that album. This is Karma. I don't think I'm gonna get used to this attention. No, not ever. Never been too shy for the limelight. But I never really cared much. Always knew what direction to fly, right? But I never really cared much. Oh, I need to stop treating my soul like I need them. I'm too busy making promises when I can't. Sir, welcome to Bullseye. I'm so happy to have you on the show.
And thank you for having me, man.
I like to see different reactions when somebody's own record comes on. You were a cool head nodder. You went into your headspace.
Oh, man, I've listened to that song so many times over the last like couple weeks, man. It's just, it's kind of soothing at this point.
One time Bonnie Pointer started singing along with herself. And I was like, yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God, there's a Pointer sister.
That's
6
awesome.
Feet away from me.
That's awesome.
Singing to her own song. We're in Northeast Los Angeles as we record this, and you're from Inglewood.
Yes.
People, I think, have a pretty monolithic idea of what Los Angeles is. Mm. What's Inglewood like, and how's it similar to or different from the sand and palm trees and Muscle Beach idea that people have of LA?
Inglewood is, it's actually very laid back. Funny enough, it's airport city, so it's the city that LAX is closest to or resides in, I would say. And there's a lot of, you know, moving around, hustling and bustling, but for the most part, it's laid back. There's a lot of money in Inglewood, though, that people don't know about, you know, especially since the stadium was built over there. They just built SoFi over there, and they're building an arena for the Clippers. So there's a lot of money in Inglewood, and the cities that we're attached to are also, you know, some of the nicest cities, like Redondo, you know what I mean, El Segundo, and Yeah, man. I've been there since I was 9. My dad grew up in the same house that we moved into when I was 9. And, like, you know, it's a family house. We've had it in our family since, like, 1964. So, you know, we know so much about the history of the city. And it's so good to be back. You know, I'm, like, 2 blocks from where I grew up, you know, in another house. But, yeah, it's nice over there right now, man. And it's only getting better.
Who was it in your family that was in your childhood home?
It was mom, dad, brothers, 2 brothers. Sometimes my uncle, sometimes my grandma. You know what I mean? We had people, you know, coming in and out, family whenever they needed.
Your mom was a very serious musician.
Yes, still is.
Was there a piano in the house?
Of course. Oh, yeah. Always. Upright. My mom always dreamed of having a baby grand. And me and my brother actually got to buy her one last year, which was, that felt great. But we always had an upright. We could never afford it or have the space, you know, none for a baby grand. So
did you play the piano when you were a kid?
No, I still don't. I can play by ear, but terribly still. You know, I don't practice enough. You know, that's one thing I know about any kind of instrument. You got to practice, like, you got to stay consistent. So at a certain point, I could play better than I can now, but I don't ever practice. But yeah, I mean, I know what I'm good at and I stick to it now. I don't try to, like, do too much. I'm getting old, man.
Your mom sang professionally. Was there like a family band situation? Like, was there a Von Trapp family thing?
So me and my brothers were in a group when we were younger. We were actually signed to DreamWorks a long time ago. I was like 9 or something like that, 10. But we were signed under Gerald Busby, who is, man, it's one of the biggest record executives of all time. And it was a weird situation. I wasn't into it as a kid, but both my brothers were really excited about it. And, you know, we did a demo and, you know, nothing really came of it. But
These older or younger brothers?
Older. I'm the baby. I'm the youngest. So, you know, I remember it clear as day. We got demos and stuff. I would play it for you if I had it on my phone. It's hilarious. But, you know, that was the start of my music career, I guess.
Was it secular music?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, and I mean, we grew up in church, but my parents, you know, they never really boxed us in, and they were the ones writing the songs, which is hilarious. My mom and my dad, which I think is hilarious. My dad loves that he has a song credit on something that we sang on. That was like a dream come true for him.
Was your mom working in secular music at the same time as she was? Because she was music director of the church, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So was she also on the road when you were a kid?
Studios? You know, most of the stuff that she did before church, or before she was the minister of music at our church in particular. So a lot of that stuff, we were little kids. We were like 1, 2 years old while she was traveling, you know, working with Michael Jackson, Chaka Khan, and stuff like that. But once she became minister of music at the church, that was her full-time job. But she traveled with the church. You know, they did a couple of records, and they would do church tours. And you know, I just remember her working Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, which was Bible study, choir rehearsal, and actual church. You know what I mean? So she did that 30 years straight, still doing it.
I mean, I watched a video of your mom singing, and I think I had imagined a small church ensemble. I had imagined, you know, a 12-person chorus and your mom and a, you know, 4-piece band of guys from the neighborhood kind of situation.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But what I saw in the video that I looked at was like 35...
You saw a big, yeah, you saw probably a Bam Crawford's Purpose. There's a song, a gospel song that she wrote a long time ago that was huge. Even forevermore, my head. And there's all kind of video of her singing that with the big choirs and stuff. And I mean, she's done that kind of stuff before. You know, like when she was younger, she was in a group called the PTL Singers. It's an old school. It's like 80s, bro. I the only reason I know about it is because she was part of it. But, you know, she's used to that kind of stuff. My mom is amazing. I love her.
Even more still to come with Sir. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu with Black Twitter, A People's History from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, Black Twitter, A People's History tells the story of how Black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History, premieres May 9th, streaming on Hulu.
This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Sir. He's a chart-topping R&B singer, a songwriter who's worked with Stevie Wonder and Anita Baker, among others. His newest album, Heavy, just dropped. It's fantastic. Let's get back into our conversation.
Did you think that you had to be able to sing like your mom to be yourself fronting an act?
No. I mean, to be honest.
Because your mom can sing her tail off.
Oh, like, yeah. And you know what's funny? I feel like my older brother, Davion, sings circles around me. You know what I mean? It's just what they have. And I never wanted to be a singer, honestly. I just wanted to write songs. The whole Sir thing came just because I was writing songs that no one else could sing. It was like I would demo songs or people would demo my songs, and it just didn't sound right. So I'm still, you know, a work in progress, I would say, with my vocal and, like, always trying to improve and, you know, very conscious, very self-conscious, you know, scared half the time. But, you know, I definitely have had a lot of time to, like, just develop what I'm comfortable with in my voice and challenge myself too. You know, I push and I pull all the time just trying to get better, you know, but I have a lot of like great examples to look up to in my family. And, you know, in the music industry, there are a lot of amazing vocalists. You know, my favorite vocalist right now is Tori Kelly. God, she can sing. God, she can sing. I think Sing, that last scene in the movie Sing, oh, broke me down. You know, but I pay attention and I listen and I try to take what I can from, you know, the people that I admire.
Were you ever concerned that being an R&B singer was corny?
Nah. I do what I like. And you know what I mean? I to this day, I know I have people that don't like what I do. You know what I mean? And just there are people in general that just have their preference and that's okay. But I do what I do because it feeds me. You know what I mean? And I know that it touches other people. But I love R&B music. I'm a fan of it. I mean, growing up, I think that's what I listened to more than anything because of my parents. You know what I mean? Yeah, we grew up in a church, but my dad is an old school gangster. He listened to everything. You know what I mean? He listened to a lot of soul music. And my mother listened to a lot of R&B. Stevie Wonder, Donny Hathaway, Aretha.
I'm imagining your dad listening to DeBarge right now.
Nah. My dad was more of like a... Because
that's the OG. Like one time DJ Quick told me, he's like, you know who's the hardest person I ever recorded with? I was
Who?
Like, who's that? He's like, El DeBarge.
I would imagine. Now, my dad was more like a Teddy Pendergrass, Marvin Gaye type of guy. You know what I mean? But my dad loved the Stylistics. Let's say that.
Well, you know what I mean? You don't have to convince. I love the Stylistics and the Spinners more than anything.
You know, my dad has a really like acquired taste. He's been around the block a couple of times, so he knows the right songs to play, man. But my mom, she knew the guys. Like, she knew the excellence. Stevie Wonder, you know what I mean, was her like idol, which is cool because we brought him to her 60th birthday party like last year. Amazing experience, bro. He sat down and played and sang My Cherie or More and put my mom's name in it. It was like, Miss Jackie, the woman in a summer day. Everybody in the room stopped. The bar closed for a second. Everybody stopped moving. You know, crazy. Man, and what's funny is Daniel D. Smoke is the one that invited him, and my brother Davion got Tyrese to show up the same day, and I invited like Joe Blow from down the block. So I was like, we had a $20 minimum on gifts, guys. How did you get Stevie Wonder to show up?
I mean, I would honestly, like, I would be most upset if I got Tyrese to come.
And
who,
like,
does a mom want to see more than Tyrese?
Right.
No one. This is the most beautiful human being in the world.
Right. And then Stevie walks in.
Then Stevie Wonder walks in.
Like, what a day that was.
Like, sorry.
What a day. And you know, my mom was always, going back to the question, my mom and dad, like, I think as we grew up, they wanted to plant perfect seeds with what they were listening to by setting an example, you know what I mean? But they also, like, gave us free rein to, like, find what we wanted to, you know, minus, you know, violence and guns and stuff like that. Like, yeah, you can listen whatever you want. Listen ain't crazy, you know? So I did a lot of exploring, listened to a lot of Metallica when I was younger, you know what I mean? I love John Mayer, you know? And just, I always just find things in different places that I never knew I would like, you know what I mean? And I thank my parents for that for sure.
Was your mom using when you were a kid?
My mom got sober right after I was born. So I was a preemie. I was 3 pounds, 6 ounces when I was born. All my brothers were preemies. But she got sober right after I was born. My dad got sober after he got out of jail. He got sober in jail. I mean, you really don't got a choice. But he was... this was probably like 96 when he got out. But no, my mom, like, all of my life that I can remember, sober. Sober as a bird.
And if she was deeply involved in the church, that must have been kind of part of her testimony.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And still is to this day. You know what I mean? Which I think a lot of people, you know, look at church as a place where everyone's, you know, doing great and stuff like that. Nah, church is the exact opposite. Church is where you go to find God, you know what I mean, when you need him the most, you know. So I think my mom was always good at, you know, treating people as her equal. She stood in a place of authority in the church, but she never made anybody feel like that because she knew she was human, you know. And I think that's something that I carry with me to this day, is that as much as I've done and I do, I'm a normal guy, and, you know, I'm very emotional. I go through things. I've had a really tough, like, couple days, man, now. Feeling very human in here, you know? And, you know, it just, I appreciate, you know, having an example like my mother to kind of keep me grounded.
What did it mean to you that your mom was sober when you were a kid?
Everything. I mean, sheesh. My mom was, she was the rock, man. She was the breadwinner. My father with his, you know, he had 2 strikes when I was a kid. He had been in jail twice. And, you know, he did everything he could to provide, you know, but my mother had a great job and a great career that did a lot for us. And, you know, I hear the stories of my mom doing drugs, but I couldn't picture it. I couldn't picture her going through what she said she went through. Or the stories my grandma tells me about how she couldn't leave the house and she had her wallet. My grandma had to take her money, take her keys, you know, and I couldn't imagine it. It doesn't even sit well in my spirit, you know what I mean? But it happened. And it's that's crazy to think about.
I grew up going to meetings with my dad, who got sober when I was a toddler. And I think that experience really shaped how I thought about a lot of things in my life. And my dad was sober my entire life, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But that experience of hearing those stories is really, even though I don't remember my dad ever taking a drink, you know, mm-hmm. he got sober before I can remember.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time imagining it.
Yeah.
But also, I know how central it was to his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, I think... one of the weirdest things was when I started going to meetings, going to a meeting with my dad, you know, who's still in sobriety. He does meetings all the time. Now, mind you, I don't knock AA, but it didn't really work as much as I wanted it to for me. So I more so go to meetings like when I need to, when my emotions are down. You know what I mean? I'll go to a meeting. But my dad, he's consistent. And I just remember the first time we went to a meeting together. And I saw him break down telling his own story. And it was a story I had never heard, you know, and it just shook me to the core, man. It really, that was a good thing. It was the worst pain I could feel at the moment, you know, and I was barely sober at the time. I was probably like a month sober. But yeah, it shook me to the core, messed me up, man, and really kind of helped keep me on the path that I'm on now.
Did you speak in front of your dad?
No. Not that day. No. I have since. and ball, I cry. I'm an emotional wreck, bro. A lot of it comes from the experiences. You know, the transition from losing control to fighting for control to gaining control is a roller coaster. So, you know, I could see, you know, any kind of like reunion or any kind of like mom coming back from war and surprising her daughter on the basketball court. I'm on the floor. I'm out of here. Any of that. You know, the power that it gives me is great. You know, I'm having, you know, control over my emotions and being willing to lose them all at the same time because of what I've been through. It's a powerful thing.
How long have you been clean now?
A year. And man, I have to really think because it's March. So a year and 3 months. Yeah.
First of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
One day at a time.
Every day. Yep.
Was there something that changed your path? Why'd you get sober?
The why to me is almost is so much less important. It's more important. The how is more important. You know what I mean? Time and forgiveness. Therapy was huge. I think therapy worked worlds better than rehab would have worked for me. You know what I mean? A lot of stuff that I was going through was so personal. You know, and yeah, my therapist did a lot with just helping me forgive myself and you know, finding the roots of the problems, you know what I mean? Depression and you know, relationship issues, communication issues, and yeah.
Hey, Bullseye listeners, it's Jesse. I'm joined by Richard, one of the producers of Bullseye. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Jesse, how's it going?
Also, my dog is in the studio right now, if anybody hears him. His name's Junior.
Yes.
It's Max Fun Drive time. Of course, Maximum Fun is the company that produces Bullseye. Now, I used to say it was the company I own, but now I'm a worker owner alongside you and all of the other employees of Maximum Fun.
Yes.
And we are supported by direct membership. Some Bullseye listeners might know about this, some might not, but you can go to MaximumFun.org/join, sign up, send us $5 a month, and that's what makes this show possible. Richard, what do you do on the show?
I am a producer on the show. I actually started as a fellow. I was in the year-long fellowship program with Maximum Fun.
What's the fellowship program?
So the fellowship program is basically you work on Bullseye and you learn the ins and outs of how to produce a radio show and a podcast. I'm not going to lie, before I started working on Bullseye, I had really no idea what went into editing. So I kind of just came thrown right in and I learned a lot. I learned how to edit, learned how to book guests, work on scripts for the show. You know, producing the two episodes that we release every week. It was a lot. And since then, I've become a producer here at Maximum Fun, and I'm a worker owner.
So this episode is an interview with Sir.
Right. TDE.
This was one, thank you for shouting them out. This was one that you spearheaded along with our Rap Month. You and I worked a lot together on the Rap Month.
Yes.
Why did you want to have Sir on the show?
I wanted to have Sir on the show. Well, one, because I'm a fan. I'm not even going to lie. Two, I was
really... You don't need to lie about that. It's fine.
We're fans.
That's what we do.
Yes, that is true. And was really anticipating his new album. It had been a while since he released his first project. And he was, you know, talking about what went into making this new album and why it took so long. I also just think he's super talented and someone that I thought our listeners would enjoy to listen to on the show.
Can I say something that might sound like a brag, but I think it's just the honest truth?
Okay.
I think Bullseye is the best public radio program in the world on urban music.
I'm going to second that.
I don't think there's anybody else doing what we're doing. Rap Month was a big example of that.
Yes.
This is something I've wanted to do forever. It's something that I'm motivated to, that I was inspired to do every time we got an email from somebody who said, please no more rap on public radio.
I remember that. I think we got some tweets too. So
we get the occasional. But this was a big effort. It involved the whole production staff of Bullseye, you and our booker, Mara, who's mm-hmm. a big addition to Bullseye.
Absolutely.
Both to the cost of production of Bullseye and to the quality of production of Bullseye, I think.
Yeah.
So what was your goal for Rap Month?
Last year was the celebration of... 50 years of hip hop. And I think what was really cool about Rap Month is we, you know, celebrated the anniversary of hip hop, but we also were just celebrating rap like in general. And one of the things I worked on was, like I mentioned before, booking guests. And we brainstormed some artists that we wanted to have on the show, rappers, and, you know, reaching out to publicists and trying to make that happen. And we got, I feel like, a pretty solid lineup for Rap Month. It was really cool. I mean, Master P, Rakim.
Something I was really proud of about Rap Month is, you know, we made a big list and worked our butts off getting people into the studio, which, you know, in rap world, people are going a lot of different directions,
yes.
Let's say.
Yes.
It can be challenging right. to get people into the studio.
Right.
But I think, like, one of the really cool things is we didn't just get people, like, you and I are both really passionate hip-hop fans,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that we just got people into the studio that you might expect, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, even somebody like Rakim. Like, you might expect to hear Rakim on a, you know, series of public radio interviews for the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, mm-hmm. right? But would you expect to hear Jeezy and Master P? Maybe not so much.
Right.
Right? And I that's something that I'm really proud of with our coverage of hip-hop in particular on Bullseye. Of course, all of this is made possible because Richard Salary and Kevin's and Danielle, who's outside the studio right now, and Mara's are all paid for, not by NPR. We love NPR. You mm-hmm. should join your local station, but by Maximum Fun. And right. Maximum Fun is a membership organization.
Yes.
So you can be part of it by going to MaximumFun.org/join. And in fact, speaking of rap, we have a special bonus episode only for members that is completely hip-hop themed.
Yeah. Yeah. We have our conversation with Boots Riley that went on for, I think it was 3 hours that day.
Yeah.
And yeah, we talked about the coup. And
I think we did 6 hours with Boots.
Yeah. It was a good day, but it was fun.
I know there was mandated overtime involved, legally mandated overtime. I have a great time anytime Boots is in here. I've known Boots for 20 years.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. Yeah, I've known Boots for 20 years. So, you know, Boots used to come. My mom taught at Santa Rosa Junior College in Santa Rosa, California.
Mm-hmm.
He used to get on the bus and ride up to Santa Rosa to do the like arts and lectures series at Santa Rosa Junior College every year. What my mom would bring him up once a year.
Yeah,
you know, she got like $700 to bring somebody or something. Boots would always come. God bless him. A good man, a man of the people. Yeah. Now you also get other cool free stuff if you become a member of Maximum Fun.
Yeah.
For example, pins.
Right. We do have pins. Pins are back.
What's our pin this year? It's really cool.
Our pin, it says, speaking into microphones, I believe.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty cool.
speaking into microphones, by the way, like one time I floated the idea of no longer saying that
mm-hmm.
because originally the joke of that was that there was no producer on the show.
Right.
It was just me making the whole thing in my apartment. And there was a listener riot. This was in the Sound of Young America days, 14 years. Like, people would not accept that they wouldn't hear their favorite in-joke at the end of the show. So
We can't have it.
I had to leave it in
there. We can't have it.
So if you become a member at the $10 a month level, you can get that pin that you can only get by becoming a member.
Mm-hmm.
You get access to years and years and years of members-only bonus content.
Right.
Most importantly, you are supporting the production of this show, which absolutely would not exist without the members of Maximum Fun. So I hope that if you are listening right now, you will take this opportunity to go to MaximumFun.org/join and become part of this. It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the R&B singer, Sir. I want to play a record from your new album called No Evil. Show me what you made of. I've been lonely for days and days, but we're one in the same. Part of my superstition. But with my supervision, I see so much of myself, my past, my pain, my pride, and my ego. But
So the video of this song is a sort of tribute to D'Angelo's Untitled video, which for folks who haven't seen it, you know, D'Angelo on his second album, Voodoo, had put out a single that had done fine, but not remarkably. And Untitled is a very beautiful ballad. And they made a video where he's apparently nude. And he's very muscly and shiny.
Yes.
He had always been kind of a soft, cute guy.
Yeah.
Before that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it transformed his career in a lot of ways. But it also, it was an extraordinarily successful video.
Yeah.
But I think it was also something that he struggled to live with to this day.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about being in conversation with ripped D'Angelo and the idea that if you're an R&B singer, you have to be gorgeous?
I don't agree with that per se. I think, you know, artists like Xavier Omar and, you know what I mean? There are other artists that aren't the symbol of, you know, sex that are doing just fine in R&B. But I think it was, it wasn't even about that for me. It was more so about me, you know, showing the new version of me. And dude, I got up to 248 pounds. If you look at the pictures at Daniel's wedding, D Smoke, I'm calling him Daniel so many times. I have to refer to him as D Smoke. But the pictures at this guy's wedding, I was 248 pounds. This year I dropped down to 179 at my smallest and I was shredded. I was like ripped. But then I was on this stupid, crazy diet to get there, you know. But like, I don't think I shot, you know, the video with that intention. The director, you know, kind of planted that seed and we ran with it. And when we saw the visual, you know, in action, we were like, oh, this might actually work, you know. But I wasn't like trying to copy D'Angelo or trying to like say I'm a sex symbol, because that's not even, if people that know me know I'm not. I'm just a goofy, you know, nerd, you know. But I definitely wanted people to see that I was doing great, not just doing good. I'm doing great. I'm taking care of myself. I'm happy. I'm healthy. And, you know, we're gonna continue to like stay on that path. And that was just a little Easter egg just to show people that, you know, Daryl's back, you know, that's all.
What's your relationship like with your body? I mean, you say, I feel like a lot of muscle dudes are nerds.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It takes a certain kind of nerdery to make, you know, you don't just exercise a lot and then become a muscle dude.
No. There's so much education that goes behind it and time. But my relationship right now with my body is okay, you know. Everybody at the gym has a little dysmorphia, you know, it happens, you know, but I'm like, okay, I'm 198 right now. Over the last few weeks, I've been putting on because I was traveling and I was about 183, 184, which is small for me. And it wasn't like the way I wanted it to look. I was starting to lose muscle and I wasn't, you know, able to get to the gym. So I was like, okay, it's bulk season. So I've been bulking as of lately. So right now I'm happy. I'm going to leave here. I'm going to eat good, you know, and then I'm going to try to get a workout in later.
Me too, sir. I'm also in bulk season.
Yeah, good.
I'm in the perpetual bulk season of
year
the
round.
Soul. Yeah.
Oh, man.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute. When we return, Sir will tell us about the last time he performed in church. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the R&B singer, Sir. What changed you to become serious about pursuing a music career? Because most musicians I interview on the show, they're serious about becoming a professional musician when they're 15, 16 years old, and you were well into your 20s.
I don't know, man. I think I was, I had just gotten fired from my job at the gym. Like, I was just in a stage in my life where I didn't know what I wanted to do. And my brothers looked like they were having fun more than anything. They were making money and it was impressive. You know what I mean? And, you know, we always liked to challenge each other. So I looked at it as a challenge back then. Like, maybe I could do this. If I could, I bet you I could do it better than them, you know? And it started as curiosity. I can't even tell you, like, I had a raging fire inside of me that no, I still to this day struggle with being an artist, bro.
Which part of it?
The business, the people, the way you get looked at, the way you get treated, the way you get talked to sometimes, you know, the.
On which end? The part about people
both,
you know, wanting to admire you as a symbol of their own emotional lives, or mm-hmm. the part about being a commodity?
Both, you know what I mean? And as far as the people, you know, like, we deal with labels all the time. I have to answer to people, you know what I mean? I make mistakes that, you know, I have to move forward from. And, like, it's just a lot of stuff that I didn't think this through before I decided to become Sir. I just was doing music trying to, like, feed my family at the time, you know, and trying to, you know, make more of what I had, you know, and it turned into something way bigger than I could have ever expected. And I'm just trying to hold up on my end of the bargain.
Did you think you were just going to be a guy that works at Guitar Center when you worked at Guitar Center? Like, were you? Because everybody that works at Guitar Center, I presume, has an EP on SoundCloud.
For
right?
sure. No, I got that Guitar Center job after I was Sir. I already was a working musician and, you know, had somewhat of a fan base, which is weird because going to Guitar Center every day, people are like, no.
Do people recognize you at
all
Guitar Center?
Yeah, yeah. And I get that all the time. Are you? Oh my gosh, can I take a picture? Yeah, especially, you know, back then my audience was like California, Arizona, and Portland because I dropped through Kenny Fresh, who's out of Portland. You know what I mean? So I was more locally known than anything. I did a lot of local shows. So definitely got recognized, you know. But when I was at Guitar Center, I was already, you know, we'd already dropped music and I was already talking to TDE. So we were already involved. I just wasn't signed yet. And I got signed while I was still at Guitar Center. And then about a month or two after that, after they announced, I was like, I quit my job. You know what I mean? So. You know, I definitely didn't like go into Guitar Center like, well, this is it. No, it wasn't like that. It was like I was broke. I was still a broke musician and I needed to pay my bills and I didn't have enough coming in at the moment. But seeds were planted. Things were moving, you know. But I mean, I think that was the smartest thing I'd ever done was get the Guitar Center job.
When you signed a deal with a big deal label / management company in Top Dog Entertainment, who, you know, represented and made records with some of the biggest and best in, especially in LA, but in urban music in general. How is it like what you expected and how is it different?
I had no expectations. I was on the outside. I was green. So it's been a really hard learning curve and it's more so, like, these is gangsters. It's not even forget about the music. You know, I had to learn how to move and operate inside of that realm of the mafia of TDE. You know what I mean? And that's real. You know what I mean? I'm green. I'm not no gang member in LA. You know, I come from a place where my brother gangbang, you know, and people around me. But I'm like, I was sheltered as a kid. I was taken care of. Pish posh. I don't want to fight. You know, so I had to learn how to like communicate and just move properly in my circle of people. I made countless mistakes when I first, you know, showed up. So that was first. But
what kind of mistakes are you talking about?
Man, trying to show off and, you know, get online like I'm big in this and talking above myself and, you know, trying to prove points that didn't need to be proved. And, you know, I learned a lot about, you know, when to speak and when you need to speak up.
Do you think you're going to be Sir forever? Or you think there's a time when you hang that hat up?
I wish you didn't ask me that today, man.
Do you want to tell me why?
No. I just, certain days I love it. Certain days I don't. I just, you know, being Sir is hard. Being Daryl is cool. Daryl is chill. Sir Daryl, the one that's at the house, he's chill. He plays Call of Duty, plays Tekken. He just sits at the house with video games with his, you know, watches Mickey Mouse with his daughter. My life is easy, you know what I mean? And yeah, you know, the name of the game is longevity for me. So I definitely want to see how far this goes, but I'm always curious about what life would look like outside of this. And I think that's a good thing. I think I have something to look forward to in my 60s or 70s maybe, but you know, I'm going to be served for a long time just because I, like I said, I'm holding up my end of the bargain, man. I've already planted too many seeds. I've already done too much work, and there's so much more to be said and done. So I know this isn't my last album. I know that I'm still enjoying creation. And as long as I'm enjoying creating the music, it'll be my job to follow through. So, man, I'm sir now, you know, but this is like sobriety for me. So it's one day at a time.
What's the last time you sang in church?
Whoa. No comment. No, I'm just kidding. When was that? You should have asked me when was the last time I've been to church. Sheesh. It was at a funeral. So 3 years ago. It's tough. It's my godson's funeral. It's the last time I sang at church.
What did you sing?
Ooh. Not a second or another minute, not now and another day, but as this moment with my arms outstretched, I need you to make a way as you have done so many times before. Through a window or an open door, I stretch my hands to thee. Come rescue me, I need you right away.
Well, I sure appreciate you making the trip up here and taking the time to talk to me.
This was the best interview I've done in a long time. I'm sorry if I seem like my spirits are a little low. I really appreciate you kind of pulled me out of a rut today, man. I appreciate that, brother.
Well, thank you very much.
Sir, his new album, Heavy, is available to buy and stream now. Go grab it. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Although we have had the pleasure of being in the office a lot more lately, where I was just there yesterday, and the question was, could we get our colleague Danny into a particularly large promotional tote bag? The answer was yes. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Daniel Huesias. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Special thanks this week to Hema Castro at Stone's Throw Studios in Los Angeles for recording me and Sir while our own studio was under construction. Our interstitial music is by DJ W, also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is Huddle Formation by The Go Team. Thanks to the Go Team. Thanks to their label, Memphis Industries. Bullseye is on Instagram at Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. You can also find us on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sir. I sure did. He was giving out daps and hugs after that interview. What a sweet man.
I got a picture.
Yeah. Richard did ask for a picture and get one.
It's my phone wallpaper now.
It was very cute. I would love for you to support Maximum Fun in this work that we do. Go to MaximumFun.org/join to do it. And the honest truth is, as adorable as Richard is right now, and you can't see him, but he's bright red and looking cute as a button. And this poor young man would be out on the street without your membership. Just be eating banana peels out of garbage cans.
Those actually aren't that bad.
MaximumFun.org/join.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Allianz Travel Insurance. Don't get caught without emergency medical coverage on an international trip. Learn how Allianz Travel Insurance can protect your trip from the unexpected at AllianzTravelInsurance.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news. Some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out. What's going on around the world and at home? 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.